welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them. Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and you should probably put a new tractor,
you know, under your turkey?
Under your turkey, yeah. Yeah, I think that would
Don't try to go buy any celery or cranberries, though, because those are in short supply.
Short supply, that's right.
Store had zero yesterday.
Yeah.
No celery, no cranberries. Just odd.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know why we had a run on celery, but
shortage. I mean, you have to have shortages.
Exactly. Otherwise, yeah, it's not fun.
That's right. So you can go up and see them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard or give them a call at 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And I figured out the obvious free advertising of the week.
Oh.
Duh. It should be Simpson University.
Hey, there you go.
Duh. What was I thinking?
Perfect.
So you do the free advertising of the week.
Well, we have some amazing programs, and a lot of stuff we're doing lately is involving STEM-related, which is science, technology, engineering, math. But we have, obviously, I guess obvious to us that are local, a nursing program that is just number one in the state. Amazing people. We're just so blessed to have the faculty that we have. Incredible people for this community. They just love the area and live here. And then the students that we bring in, a majority of them come from this region. So a lot of them from the Valley. Mm-hmm. They're in the, La Malfa area, the agriculture and farming and
district
all the way.
District one, congressional district one. Yeah.
Well, but all the way down to Bakersfield and then we have some international students, but, the business program I teach in the undergrad, in, CIS, computer information systems, business, and, the people that are in the, masters of organizational leadership. I'm part of, leadership reading as well. And, we're boosting, what is happening out there in our local leadership, like people like you, Aaron, and others that are out there in the community trying to make a
big
difference.
Well, you can spot the Simpson kids, mm-hmm, you know, when you go to restaurants and different things, and you'll have somebody who's just really clean cut, super nice, really on task, you know, the kind of kids you want to have working in your business, and never fails through the course of conversation, you know, oh, I'm a student over at Simpson's. Like, of course you are.
Yeah. And then I'll go into a room full of people that are there that are involved in the community, and invariably, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50% of them are alumni. And there's 4,000 alumni of the adult degree completion program, which is where when people can go back later in life, complete their bachelor's degree. So we have a wide range of courses in the people that usually are in them rise to the top. They're
it's a great campus too. It's not, you know, it's not difficult to navigate. It's not crowded. And we live really near there, and you would think like, oh, you live by university. What a drag. Yeah. No, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's a very, very nice place. So if you have kids, nieces, nephews, Simpson University in beautiful Redding, California, it's kind of not downtown either, which is nice. You know, you don't have the parking problems. You don't have the crime problems. You're in a great part of town over on the east side.
Beautiful.
There you go. That was a good free advertisement of the week.
Thank you.
Professor Dan Sloan. So he is our captive again this hour. So we can learn more
about Communist China.
Our captive from Communist China. We got him in the studio.
One thing we didn't really talk about, if I went to China, because that's why I was out of the room.
Oh,
I was booking a flight to China. I want to get my seats early.
They already told me because they were watching you.
So when I get over there and I want to rent a car and tour the country, how's that work?
Probably not.
That's a big no.
A good idea.
I would think so.
Yeah.
That's how Bill winds up being missing.
Yeah. Missing.
Missing. Yeah. And you might attract somebody to run into you, because you're a foreigner.
Literally.
Yeah. Because then there'd be some liability on your part.
Wow.
And some fear that, you know, you might be, held captive to having to pay, you know,
by the
extorted,
government.
Well, by the person or by the government. Normally, what happens when somebody's in an automobile accident, they just stop the car right where it's at. Even if the traffic, you know, is snarled for hours, you just stop right where you're at. They send out the local insurance company. It's all owned by the government. But the insurance company will come out, write up a report, decide who's guilty on the spot, and then ask you to go get money out of your ATM and come pay the person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, so
one and done, huh?
Yeah. And so decisions are made very, very quickly. And they do that. They do that because, you know, socialism and communism encourage cheating. You know, it's a paternalistic type of government, and people expect government to do things for them. And in accordance with that, they're supposed to obey certain rules. And of course, everybody's getting the minimum out of the government, and then they're going to be the one that cheats and gets away with it. Mm-hmm. They're the smart person. So everybody continues to cheat. Wow. So it's endemic within society, and so you can't rid yourself of it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's a lot of these things are done that way purposely because they know their people are going to cheat.
Wow.
That's funny. I've heard that same story. I did business with a company out of the Dakotas that sold equipment in Russia. Mm. And they said they have to be very, very careful when they're dealing with Russians because over there, if they cheat you or they get your equipment and don't pay for it, they don't look at that as cheating. They look at that as just they're better business people.
and Russia.
Advantage Russia. And they said you have to be very, very careful because that's the first thing on their mind is to take advantage of you.
Yeah. Well, I told you I was there with Carrie and Lou, John Carrie and Jacob Lou, in a high-level economic and exchange summit. And we were back in a back room, and the person sitting next to me was a university. It was from what's the dance school back in New York? Slipped my mind.
Oh,
the what?
Juilliard.
Juilliard. The president of Juilliard was sitting next to me, and so I gave a presentation, and he gave his presentation, and then we went around with the economic stuff. And generally, what happens, and this is my perception of what happens in China, when we come there with our government. Generally, it's already planned in advance. There's an agenda. There's documents that have already been printed up, an agreement that's supposed to have already been made. We bring it in under our law, under American law. We created the document in English. We cited the types of law as well as the consequences of not obeying that law. And we present it in front of them, and they're great. Did you bring the money? Number one.
Yeah.
And we'll sign it, but and you're going to sign it. We have no intention of ever obeying it. You do, and we're going to hold you to it because it's under your law in your language.
So you're bound by your law. We're not.
We're not. We have no intention, and we do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just that understanding that that's the way it's going to work. And unfortunately, we just keep repeating the same mistake. And in reality, when you're Chinese and you're looking across the pond, and a lot of Chinese come to America, and I've told you off the air that I just absolutely love the Chinese people. The people themselves are people. They want to worship. They want to have freedom. They want all the various types of things they can do with freedom, including freedom of speech and opportunity and all the things we take for granted. Kind of lost my train of thought there, but the way that they look at what we do here in America is how they're going to treat us. So when we don't obey our own laws, why would they?
Yeah.
When we've got 5 million people coming across the southern border.
Yeah. Right.
When we've got people going into Walgreens or Rite Aid or name the store and walking out, and there's no consequences for their illegal behavior. Just drugs, alcohol, all the things that happen in our society, and we're not in charge of what we're doing. And they're just looking at that saying, you know, if you're not going to obey your own laws, why would we? And that's my own personal opinion as to what's really happening
there. Well, that's the message.
But it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, we have a lot of people in this country that are kind of thinking, why am I working so hard? You know, I mean, does that make me dumb?
I have students at Pepperdine at the law school, and where I work down there is in a think tank. It's the Strauss Institute for Arbitration and Mediation, for Dispute Resolution, ADR, Alternative Dispute Resolution. And if you think about what that really is, most Americans are thinking mediation, okay? It's an easy one to think about. So mediation means that you get in a room, the two parties, or however many parties there are. You have a mediator, multiple mediators. You talk about the issues. You try to resolve the conflict without going to court, which means you've just sidestepped the legal system. Okay. So when you have a lot of international students that come in, and a lot of them are judges, my students are in at Pepperdine, some of them from China, they're coming in order to find ways to go around American law, not a way to resolve the dispute or the conflict because they don't want to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
Generally what will happen in China, what I was just talking about, if you sign a contract in China with a Chinese company that's ultimately owned by the Chinese communist government, it'll go in front of a court before they ever step foot on a foreign land. Like if you have an agreement, Alibaba and Walmart or something, between these two companies, they'll have an arbitration agreement in the contract that sidesteps the American government. They decide on the language, on the law. It might be Dutch law if it has to do with shipping or something like that. So they'll have another venue for the legal system. But before they ever leave China, they'll go to a Chinese court and have it deemed illegal under Chinese law. But they won't tell the other side.
Oh.
So then they go to mediation or arbitration, most likely. When they go to arbitration, they'll let the arbitral court and tribunal go through and decide who wins and loses. If they win, woo, yeah, we benefited from the legal system. If they lose, then they pull out the legal document from the Chinese court and say, it was illegal, so we can't pay. So yeah. What are you going to do to me?
Right.
You know, how many aircraft carriers are you going to send to collect?
Exactly.
So... yeah.
Yeah. Kind of. And then we do it again.
We do it again.
And then we do it.
And we walk right back in.
So, you know, it's our fault, in my opinion, for allowing it to happen. It's what I call willful gullibility. We go into it knowing this. A lot of it is because of the American currency, the U.S. dollar being the preeminent. It's part of my doctoral dissertation. Is that it's the trade settlement and reserve currency of the world, and that's what everybody uses in order to settle. Trade. And unfortunately, what that's done for us since World War II, since Bretton Woods, it was based on the dollar or the an ounce of gold. The dollar was based on $35 an ounce for gold.
Right.
In 1965, Charles de Gaulle, the president of France, sent a fleet over and picked up all the gold that they had exchanged their currency for.
Because we were holding.
And he was saying, well, you guys are going to go bankrupt. You can't possibly go to war in, you know, Vietnam and Korea and go to the moon and all of the social issues and all the stuff that was happening at that time. And then within 6 years, 1971, we went off the gold standard. He was right. By 73, we went on to the petrodollar, had all kinds of problems. 2001, 15 of the 19 terrorists for 9/11 were Saudis, and we pivoted. On December 11th of 2001, we allowed China into the World Trade Organization. And what we did at that time was export pollution, and we exported jobs, and we imported deflation. So back in the Jimmy Carter era, you know, right when Reagan came in, we had really high inflation, which we haven't seen until this year.
Until now.
Yeah. Until now. 40 years worth of declining interest rates. It was at 15.86%. In 1981, June of 1981, that was the 10-year treasury yield. So it was way up there. You buy a house, it was like buying it on a credit card. And if you look at it, it was almost a linear equation, a straight line all the way down to zero this year. Had nowhere to go but up. So that's why I had this is my dissertation, because it appeared obvious to me that there's no way we could sustain the type of spending that we have. And there's a guy named Minsky. By the way, during the Obama years, we had Jeffrey Immelt, who was in charge of the President's Council on Jobs and Innovation or something like that. And when China was allowed in 2001 into the World Trade Organization, GE was worth $500 billion, or was worth more than that. It lost $500. It was worth $600 billion. It lost $500 billion between then and today. So it lost $500 billion. In market capitalization. And where all that went was to China.
China.
Yeah. So I like to speak to my students about this and about others. When you go down to Walmart, and I'm only picking on – I'm not really not trying to pick on them, but this is the way it is. When you go into Walmart, look up on the ceiling by the registers, and you'll see American flags. They're hanging all the way along there. And then consider what percentage of the goods in that store are made in China.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So in my view, and I know this would never happen, but if we made a rule or a law that said you had to fly the flag of the country that had the most content in your store, what would that look like?
That would save us all a ton of time.
No, but what would that look like at Target, Costco?
Oh, yeah.
Every store.
Oh, yeah. You can't hardly buy anything anymore that's not made in China. Yeah. I mean, if you say, I'm only buying American made, you're going to do a lot of shopping because it's hard to find stuff that's
better
made
be a
American.
Researcher.
And then put an ATM, a Chinese ATM, at their checkout. Okay? Because I think it would remind people what's really happening here.
Where the money's really going.
Where it's really going. And we unfortunately, as individuals, have been seduced by low-cost consumer goods, a higher standard of living. Like I said, we imported deflation, but at the same time, we exported jobs and we exported the pollution. The American people think that they've got the cleanest economy in the world, which, you know, if you look at where the pollution is, we don't, because we are the ones that are causing the pollution.
That's
over
right.
there.
In the places that don't have
we're,
to.
We're buying the products that are creating the pollution.
But if it were made here, I mean, we're pretty innovative, and our companies would, well, they'd have to care about it, but they would care about it. And we aren't really gross polluters by and large, but that isn't what you hear.
Well, that's
that isn't what people are told.
Yeah, that's where the dollar comes into effect. And there's a guy named Minsky back in the 1940s, 50s, and I think he died in about 1980 or 90s. That's what he had postulated, was that because of the dollar and our ability to print at will, that we could continue to print money, make all kinds of mistakes. And when those mistakes ended up poorly, we would just print our way out. And that his postulation was that it would occur at larger increments. So there's iterations. It would go back around. We would have a growth cycle, speculation, all these crazy speculative environments like we have crypto and all this stuff. Then a collapse, spend our way out of it, print our way out of it. And then we'd have even a bigger problem. You know, like today we've got $31 trillion worth of debt. But on top of that, we've got Social Security of $22 trillion, and we've got Medicare of another $35 trillion, and unfunded liabilities of another $175 trillion. So we've got a quarter of a quadrillion dollars worth of debt. Now, trillion was not in people's vernacular.
Mm-mm. And now it's 20 like we just throw that down.
Just don't even blink an eye. So quadrillion is the next one that's coming.
Oh, my God. We have to take a quick break. I wish I had a song about quadrillion, but I don't.
Mm-mm.
Makes me want to change that second song, Liam. I got another idea for you. But anyway, we're speaking with Dr. Dan Sloan. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. Somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you've played before. California's a brand new game.
So, Professor Sloan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I love it. California.
Yeah, like highly unlikely, but it isn't a bank in someone else's name.
Yeah.
It just isn't gold, and, well, quadrillion is a real number.
Yeah.
Remember we used to say things like that when we were joking?
Uh-huh.
Like a gazillion dollars. Is a gazillion in the offing?
A gazillion? Probably.
working our way toward gazillions being real?
Yeah.
God. Okay, so what have we left out?
Well, there's...
Besides everything.
Everything. So there's just all kinds of amazing things that are happening out there. It's not all negative. You know, we tend to look at things that are different and discuss those, and sometimes it makes it look like, you know, everything's horrible. But I believe that if you have faith and you keep in mind that there's always somebody there to turn to talk to, and you're the people around you. And you guys had asked me earlier about family and what it was like and what's important to the Chinese people. They'll wear an American flag, a British flag. They love Australia, just, you know, the Western society and freedom.
You said their clothes are littered with flags, mm-hmm. and the Chinese government doesn't like it, but there are too many of them.
No, it's a lot of it's produced there, which is part of it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to strip that away. And then they love the influence. It's amazing is the students, it's compulsory to have English in the third grade. So they know English very well. Many of them are multilingual, meaning that they'll learn how to speak French and be fluent in French, German, Spanish, whatever, as well as English, just have a completely different educational system. I get to the students here in a minute, but just a real quick story about how their educational system is different from ours and why maybe people have a misunderstanding of what's going on when we have students from China come here and they appear to be brilliant. I've been there where in certain high schools, I had a in Zhengzhou, I told you about it, how long it took me to get to work, 2 hours going 8 miles. Well, I had two apartments, and that ended up being the case because I ended up working for two different entities, had like 2.5 jobs. I've always been an overachiever, unfortunately, working too much. But and the other apartment was in the middle of a high school, and the students would get up at 6 o'clock. There was a bugle, burr, 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 and they would get up, and they would do calisthenics, 3,000 students, E-R-Sun-Zi, doing their exercises.
Yeah.
Out there in the courtyard, all of them lived on campus, 100%.
Of the high school?
Of the high school.
Okay.
In my apartment was on the second floor of a two-story building. It was a house, basically. And it had a great veranda, beautiful. I had a barbecue and patio furniture and all this stuff. And I thought, man, when I moved in there, this is going to be awesome. You know, just lay out there. Well, you know, and you could lay your meat out on the barbecue and get a chemical burn from all of the smog. So laying out wasn't a good idea. You get black. Oh, you could just have all the soot all over you. So that didn't work out too well. But in the morning, I'd hear the students.
But it was a fun veranda to look at from the inside.
Yeah. So I'd see all the students out there. And then by 6:30, they'd be in the showers. By 7 o'clock, they would have already eaten something really quick and been in their seat. They're in their physics course first thing in the morning, 7 o'clock. They go to school all day long until 10 o'clock at night, and that's 5 days a week. So Monday through Friday, they went from 7 until 10 at night.
7 to 10.
On Saturday, they went from 7 until noon, and then on Sunday, they went from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock. 6 o'clock p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. During that 30 hours in between, their parents, one of them, generally mother, would live across the street and take them to tutoring. So, and it was brutal. Something I highly do not recommend.
No, gosh, you'd think suicide. You'd be burned out.
It was horrible.
Yeah,
but, that's why they're doing, like I said, AP, CGIE, you know, all of the different IB, which is all of the foreign, Cambridge and Oxford and all of the various programs that are prepping them to come to the United States or to a foreign university, for those that are going that direction. So it's an amazing difference. They have a Weikao, Gaokao, Zhongkao, which are different tests that they take in order for entry into the next grade. So from middle school to high school, and it's actually from grammar school to middle school to high school, and high school into college or any vocational training. So June 7th, 8th, and sometimes the 9th in most provinces, they'll have a exit exam. And when, especially when they had one child, up until recently, they had the one child policy.
Mm-hmm.
They would take that exam, and the whole life of that child was consumed with preparing for that exam. Because that was the opportunity for the family to have a future and to have an income.
Now, what happens to the kids that don't do well on the exams, the underachievers? Yeah. So, it's got to be some.
Well, and what's interesting about that is in America, if you're caught cheating, most likely you'll be, some kind of penalty, maybe even to the point of expulsion from university. And I've seen where you have 1,200 parents out there tearing the fence down because they won't let them cheat. You know, it's the opposite.
Wait.
That's the culture. Yeah. Wait a minute. Everybody else is cheating and you're not letting my child. And they'll have on the radio the day of the Gaokao, they have masseuse parlors out there where the children can come out and get a massage, get prepared for the next exam.
Wow. It's like the Olympics.
They'll shut down everything and the police will pick up children on the way to school and take them to school if they're falling behind to get there on time. They shut the factories down so there's less noise. On the radio, like here, they'll have during the exam, they'll have people that call in and try to win prizes if they have the question and the answer, and then they announce them. So, you know, when you go.
No way.
So it's a crazy environment.
You're like, I'm not at home anymore.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
It's a really different environment than we're used to here. And the competitiveness is massive. They'll go through and paint every wall, take every poster, everything down because they don't want people to have the opportunity to cheat. Metal detectors, checking for the wire in young ladies' bras to make sure there's no listening or devices in there.
To communicate.
And it's a surreal environment that they take at a very high level. Now, juxtapose that to what's happening to our educational system here. And, returning here, they have 1.4 billion people. So they self-select through various means to get a very high level of student. And, their rigor is very high, mm-hmm. but then there's a lot of cheating that goes on. So what will generally happen in my expertise, I told you a lot of it's in TESOL, so I know how to teach people and communicate with them very well. But then I have a master's of science and finance, an MBA, and that economics from Harvard, some other degrees that help me get real specific in stuff. So a lot of the job that I was doing in certain areas was to check the authenticity, so that the student had to do two things in China. They had to cheat really good in order to get a really high score. Because if they got a 99% on natural ability and everybody else got 100%, they couldn't leave. So you had to cheat. And I read.
Now you say they couldn't. They had to take it all over again?
No, they have to cheat because everybody else that's cheating will get a higher score.
Right.
Officially. And then they wouldn't be left in the dirt.
Right.
Because they
so what happens to those kids that don't do well?
Well, what ends up happening is the ones that do come here, if they cheat, they also have to be an overperformer because they come here. It costs, $150,000-$200,000 to get an apartment, tuition,
sure.
Especially if you're living in a high cost place where UCLA or USC or Pepperdine or any of those very high cost. Same thing with Reading. You got to pay a lot. Then they come here and they fail if they have been underprepared but cheated in order to get a high score.
Right.
So they have to do both. But the students that fall behind, what generally will happen, they have a different system there. Some are put into vocational schools, vocational training because of the score they achieve in order to determine what they're going to do for the rest of their life. And the same thing goes true with the universities, and they've got a high, low, and middle. So the university for law schools, because I deal a lot with law students, if unlike in America where you become a lawyer, maybe in pro bono work at first, and then you work your way into doing stuff for the DA, public defendants, and stuff like that, and then work your way into private practice, and then eventually become a judge. In China, they can graduate from university and be a judge immediately. So they don't have to go through that whole system. But that means they're a really high level. So they go to their, you know, they go to that university, and then within that range of they're preparing to become a judge, there's the rank in those as well. So then that's all that is selected as they take those exams. That's why it's so incredibly important. And when they had the one child policy, the way that they mandated it was that, you know, in order to prevent people from having more than one child, because it's communist, you work for the government. So if you had another child, you lost your job. Then you have to, more mouths to feed and no job. Mm-hmm. So it was extremely important.
So do you find that the Chinese students over here, you know, in spite of the cheating and everything that goes on, do they do better over here than, say, the American students? Or are they pretty much on the same level?
It depends. You know, they've been prepped for culture, language. I had students in high school that took the SAT, SAT-2 type exams and AP and all that. Some of them that were taking history and got a perfect 800. You know, they know, go to the mall. I like to tell people, go to the mall and you can ask them a couple things. One of them is, what are the rules of grammar? And they'll have no clue. the Americans won't. But if you ask a Chinese person, they'll know all the rules. Okay. Cause that's what they're rules based.
Right.
So they study this stuff really, really well. And if they want to be, like we have, our pilots that are here from China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And they can probably tell you about that, the people that are, run the flight school out there. But they come here, and generally they're already hired by a Chinese airline as part of their agreement to come here to learn how to fly. They have a certain percentage of them that are
Why do they come here to learn to fly? Why don't they learn over there?
I have a pilot's license as well. Part of my extreme sports.
Yep.
they come here because a lot of the airspace in China is not open. So you got about 70% of it. So they have really no general aviation community.
You can't practice.
You can't practice.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So they come here, and then on top of that, something people don't really consider is the language. Because in flight, it has to be in English. It's either English or Japanese.
Yeah, so you better learn here and hear all the accents from the towers and all that.
International. So international flights, if you're going to fly, you better know how to learn. And not only that, but if you've ever listened to the communication between the tower or even pilot to pilot, it's very fast. It's shorthand.
It's almost a different language.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you're not really good at listening in a foreign language or speaking and knowing exactly, precisely what you're doing, you know, it brings up the level of potential hazard for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was in a small plane a couple months ago, and you know, everybody in a small plane has to wear the headphones and listen to all the stuff. And I speak, you know, I mean, I've spoken English for 61 years, and I'm listening to this guy in the tower, and it was like a Reading tower. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what did that guy say? I mean, most of what he was telling the guy to do, I had no idea what he was saying.
And we're landing on the taxiway.
And it was just like, blah, 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 and it was like, what did he say? It was just weird.
It can get scary.
That's really one of the only times I've done that, because most of the time you're in a big plane and they don't let you listen to what's going on, which is probably good. You feel safer. Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, that explains the pilots. There are a lot of people who think, oh, they just sent him here to spy on us.
No, they really need that in order to build up their domestic as well, but predominantly international.
Interesting.
And like I said, I've seen a lot of things change in China. I was very blessed, like I said, fortunate to be there. And then the time I was there, there were cities just being developed like crazy. And you probably heard the stories or seen on TV where there's cities being built in the middle of nowhere for 20 million people.
Yeah, and then nobody moves in.
Well, they have, but they planned it. The Chinese do really long-range strategic planning. And I was in a Guizhou province, and when I first landed there many years ago, it took a five-hour trip along the hillside to get there. And within about 2 years, they built a highway and tunnels, and they tunnel and everything because there's no There's no environmental report. There's no worry about property. They just go wherever they want to go.
Right.
Right. So all of it's really quick. And they built some of the tallest, about half of the world's tallest bridges are in China. And they just tunneled like crazy. So now when you go there, it takes an hour instead of 5 hours along the river. But all the people along the river, just like the Erie Canal, created transportation and everybody moved. Well, that's what's happening. All those people are moving out of those areas because there's no more merchant, you know, activity.
Right? Yeah, sure. Everybody blows right by them.
Because it's all up there on the mountainside.
Yep.
Right.
So that's what they were planning for.
Fascinating. Yeah. Huh. Kind of a fun perspective on all this. I did find a song for the tests.
Oh, you did?
The Chinese tests.
I like it.
Yeah. It was the only thing I could think of. Billy Joel kind of got it. So Professor Dan Sloan is our guest. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face. You'll have to deal with pressure.
My old man, sad old man, spent his life living off the land. Breaks his heart seeing foreign cars filled with fuel it isn't ours, and wearing cotton we didn't grow. He's got the red, white, blue, blind hound farm, Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag, and the back it says USA. He won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced.
Okay, so tell people about the climate change when you have to explain it in China.
Oh, well,
not to skip that over, but
yeah,
we got to talk about that during the break.
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing you have to really think about is what do the words climate change mean? And when you ask Americans, they're not sure.
Yeah.
You know, and then you talk about anthropogenic climate change, which is human-caused climate change, and the studies and academia likes to come out with. So generally what I'll do is start out with trying to define what climate means, and then change obviously is different. So, and it's a different experience with most people. They think it's weather or something else. And so I'll go into, well, how much of the climate is that so-called anthropogenic? Human cause, and how much of it is natural, you know, volcanoes and weather and all the atmospheric reactions that we have. And I'll go around the room. You have 20, 30 people, 50 people. And I've had as many as, I don't know, I just had 8,000 online. So large numbers of people, and ask them that question, you know, how much, what percentage, and let them vote. So normally it's at least 2-4% up to 100%. You know, the answers I receive back. So they'll tell me, oh, yeah. So then I say, okay, we have consensus. Climate change is real. You all voted saying it's real. It has, to some degree, impacted our weather or whatever. And people don't think of it that way. That's when they have those studies that come out and say, you know, we have climate consensus that...
Yeah.
Exactly.
Between 2% and 100%.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we have to define the word consensus, don't we?
Yeah. So then it gets into, you know, what does it mean for your country? And China is just notorious for cheating. You know, we all know that. So there's all kinds of issues that come up there where we have something called AQI, Air Quality Index, and you have it on your phone. It's an app. You can constantly look at it and see how bad the weather is outside. When you go in to have we have these climate change forums that are going on now, there's agreements that are being had, and developing countries are given priority and waivers and all kinds of opportunities. And China happens to be a developing country that has a moon station, a very large military, largest
Navy.
That
part is bogus. They're a developing country.
Yeah. So you look at that and you go, okay, and what they just agreed to in the latest, I was watching the news on it this morning, was that China was going to, and this is what I've been talking to my Chinese colleagues about, is that they are in agreement that they want to be the leader in climate change. They do.
Hmm.
Because they want to prevent everybody else from polluting. Otherwise, their manufacturing will go away.
Uh-huh.
Make it all here so you can meet your climate goals.
Yeah, and we can pollute, but you can't.
And we'll let you know how we're doing.
Yeah.
With our magic science.
And unfortunately, and people are going to chastise me probably for this, for saying, oh, climate change. And I'm not, as far as I know, and most people who speak other languages, what they can identify with is something tangible. So when I start talking about pollution, they get it. If there's no pollution, there's no anthropogenic climate change. You know, you'd have to kill off everybody on Earth in order, sure, not to have biological or other hazards from the human race. But that kind of brings it to reality. You know, what are we doing individually in order to cause some kind of pollution that translates into a change in our climate? And then is it changing or not? Now, most people have a really difficult time with all those issues, but the Chinese look at it as an opportunity to earn a lot of income.
Yeah.
I've seen the AQI as high as 1,000, which is huge. It's like 30 most of the time in most cities in America. And it's extremely hazardous sometimes. And I say during the winter is when it's like that the most in some cities.
Well, it was painfully obvious during the Olympics, when the Olympics were in China. I mean, they were actually concerned about the athletes having to breathe the air over there.
Yeah, you wear a mask every day. Yeah. So wearing a mask is something I did for many, many years. And I lived in Wuhan, you know, and I know what the communist environment is like there. Very interesting as well. And you were asking me something about the issues that are happening today as far as Russia and China and those things. And we got into a little bit about the history of the dollar and what's happening with that. And from what I've seen at the beginning of this year, from February until May, I presented 8 seminars and had to do it online because of COVID and other restrictions and because of where it was at. The seminars were at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, and it was piped in there and then rebroadcast to the law schools throughout Russia, and had 1,500 students originally, but before it even began, I had 8,000, and it went up from there.
Wow.
So a very large audience, felt so incredibly blessed to have an opportunity to touch so many lives for people who, you know, some of your listeners might be shocked that I'm giving presentations for the Department of State from Redding, California in Russia during a time of war. But it all gets back to those issues of the dollar. And as far as I see it, in my opinion, that is predominantly the reason why we are kind of in a proxy war. You know, we have Ukraine fighting a war, and it's because of the dollar that Putin wants to get paid in his currency, in the ruble. And the reason he wants to get paid in the ruble and revalue, going back to what we were talked about before, about how we went to the petrodollar in 1973. We had 9/11. We shifted to manufacturing, bringing in lower cost goods in order to survive for our economy. The petrodollar was put into place because we were going to protect our oil producing allies, Saudi Arabia being the predominant. Now we've, through the Biden administration, have cut off a lot of the oil producing segments of our domestic economy. So pipelines were canceled, restrictions put in place. And in California, we have the rules that are coming out that we're going to have electric vehicles by 2035, right? So we're going to have electric vehicles. So we've cut off we're using the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, you know, draining that. We've reduced the amount of supply globally, caused a lot of inflation and problems here in our economy. At the same time, we're asking our oil allies to give us a deal. You know, we're going to put you out of business by 2035, but can you just give us a deal until then? And it, we've got Putin saying these are our minerals under our soil.
What a novel idea.
And we want to get paid in our currency. We don't like sanctions. And you may not agree with what we do, and I don't. But if we, you may not agree with us, but that's how we want to be paid, because we don't want to have you telling us what we can and cannot do. We want control. And that's the same thing with China. You've got them producing, by far, the largest manufacturer, you know, and they're saying we want to get paid in our currency, and we don't want to be beholding to you. So the two of them together, along with our allies that are now kind of questioning what could happen to their livelihood when a large percentage of their GDP is being produced off of a product that we no longer want to exist. And what will they do then?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some – and the answer to that is freedom, what we came to before, is the people in every country around the world that I've been to want the same things. They want freedom. And if freedom opens up all kinds of things, opportunity, travel, you know, to say what they choose, believe what they want. The Ukrainian people are proving how far people will go to retain their freedom. They would rather die than lose it. So when it comes down to a tyrant, and then tyrants don't get along, again, going back to they don't like competition. So once you do select a tyrant, they're going to be in a fight with a different tyrant in another country, and you end up with all those issues. But the American dollar is really where it's at. And as long as we keep printing dollars, you'll see some stability. And that's what Minsky, I mentioned earlier, had come to the conclusion, is that there's instability in stability. And what he meant by that is we would keep printing money to stay stable, which would create instability.
And it has.
And that's what's happening. We've reached a point to where if we stop printing, there's countries around the world, Laos being one of them where I was for a year, they're landlocked. They don't have any ocean ports. And there are 7 million people, 80% of them are rice farmers, okay? And they're getting a huge chunk of climate change money, okay, for reparations and, you know, whatever problems that perceived or not. So, like I said, defining climate change, you come back to these people have no P in their GDP. Mm-hmm. There's no productivity.
Right.
And GNI is based upon not just productivity, GDP, but also those dollars that are coming in, they're being expatriated, repatriated, that are coming from dollars earned outside, people earning an income and sending some home, investment income, interest, and all those things coming in. And as soon as you get rid of that opportunity to bring in American dollars or capital, those countries will fold.
Oh, they'll fold right now.
Or
yeah.
Go to revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And well, see what they can do.
Again, back to the instability. So we've got a couple of, like 2.5 minutes left, but I wanted you to tie Russia and China, that battle that we're looking at, because we were talking about it in the break, and we're cheating the listeners out of that.
Well, what's happening is Russia is seen as a gas station. You know, their economy is that's basically what it is. Okay,
international gas station.
And vodka, but you know they don't have a lot like China does in terms of their production, manufacturing, and China has just done a phenomenal job at taking our capital and putting it to use in a more militarized environment. So they're watching. The Chinese are extraordinarily patient people. Long-term,
oh, yeah.
Long-range planning, and they're watching everything that we are doing, that the Ukrainians, the Russians are doing. They'll observe that, and they won't make the same mistakes. And Taiwan is their ultimate goal, at least in the short run, is to take over Taiwan. There's the 9-dash line, which is the South China Sea, that they are claiming as their territory. And I've actually given presentations on a military base down in southern China, have seen how their people look at everything out there, the ocean. The Chinese construction companies are owned by the communist government, and they're the ones that do the construction of deep seawater ports. So they're in there building them, loaning the money, and they're doing it at very high interest rates. They're almost impossible to repay, and then they'll reclaim that property.
Then they call the loan.
That's handy.
Call the loan, and then they've got a seaport for their navy.
Mm-hmm. And so you figure between the two, between, I hate to spoiler alert, but between Russia and China, you figure the Chinese will let the Russians make the, you know, be the aggressors against us. They'll sit back and watch what didn't work.
Play all sides.
And then slide in behind.
And they, like I said, they'll do
that
whatever they're going
to
do with a lot of forethought and a lot of strength.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
do it quickly.
Our guest has been Professor Dan Sloan. He is over at Simpson University here in beautiful Redding, California, and wealth of information. I'm sure that we will be begging you to come back and have more of this discussion. You're listening
Absolutely.
To We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Our classes, things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright.